Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Thomas Dinas, and this is the Delicious Legacy Podcast. Welcome back to another archaeogastronomical adventure. And before we start our episode proper, my dear gorgeous listeners, I would like to thank you for your support all this time, and of course to thank even more the Patreon backers of this podcast, because without your support, this podcast wouldn't be possible. So thanks for listening, and please share this podcast with your friends and family and colleagues and anyone else who is a fan of gastronomical delights and history. Now, I don't know about you, but personally, I love honey. I think it's a magical ingredient, and I'm not so sure when I was young, when I was a little kid, what was my first impression of honey, really, or if it felt like something uncommon compared to sugar, but I think it played a very important role throughout my childhood, and I'm sure it was one of the first things that I ate as a kid. I can definitely say that we used to eat honey for breakfast with bread and butter. We used to eat honey in drinks, especially as a medicinal tea, in herbal teas, like chamomile or mountain tea, which is very popular in Greece. Something like that was also served with honey and lemon. Honey was in many things, and of course Greek honey has a long tradition throughout the history, a lot of symbolism, but also many myths and legends that follow its history. I don't know about you, but I find honey an amazing ingredient as well. Aside from the flavor and the amazing quality it has, it is also one of these ingredients that never goes off, and obviously something that doesn't need refrigeration. And yeah, if we could find an intact honey from thousands of years ago, that could be edible still. Honey is medicinal, honey is delicious, and honey has so many health properties as well. No wonder people equated it to food of the gods. I love the story. A few years ago, I did a podcast with Bez from the Happy Mondays. Basically, it was him talking about his honeybees and his honey. Basically, yeah, he produces honey now. He has his own apiary. And yeah, he was extolling the virtue of honey making and honey, and how great it is and how pretty much it's used also in pharmaceutical elements, in bandages to quickly help heal wounds. And yeah, as well as the taste of it. Did you know that in the English language, the word sweet is older than the word sugar? Of course, that makes sense if we think about it a little bit. In Europe, sweetness was experienced first. Sugar came later. Sweetness was directly from seasonal fruit gluts, from tree saps, and of course honeycombs. The word sweet was typically used in Old English in combination with the word honey, the sweetest natural substance, and together made the word honey sweet, because without honey there was no sweetness. It was impossible for one to imagine sweetness without it. Of course, when I was working as a chef in a very famous recording studio with many musicians from around the world and the staff and the local recording engineers and so on, I had an encounter with one of my managers, an old lady that had no clue about cooking or food and wanted to put everything on the fridge, store everything in the fridge. And one of the things that she wanted to put in the fridge was, of course, honey. Honey, the substance that doesn't go off ever, that obviously you want to use it in a runny form, and if you put it in the fridge, it will set and it will become difficult to use, impossible to use. And really, that quite shocked me. I was like, this is not right. Something is wrong with people's understanding of natural foods. And honey is one of the oldest natural foods, energy sources of humankind. You have to admit, honey is just amazing. And I think there's something even more glorious if one eats the honey straight from the hive with a honeycomb. You get an instant hit of that sweet energy and the glorious multitude of complex flavors from the honey itself. Also, I think speaks to something more primeval in all of us. Anyway, let's go back to our story about honey, the first food of humankind. So yeah, on today's episode, we will explore some of these aspects throughout the ancient Greek world and Roman, of course, and ancient Egypt, and generally the history of honey throughout humankind's culinary adventures. Apiculture is the art of bee cultivation in order to produce honey. In Greece, this probably took place in early prehistoric times. And as I said earlier, there are myriad of myths related to it. Greek mythology reflects honey's special value in its references to honey as ambrosia, the food of the gods of Mount Olympus. Hippocrates, the father of medicine, emphasized the nutritional and pharmaceutical value of honey. In ancient Greece, honey was used not only for its nutritional value, as I said, but also for medicinal purposes. Honey also played an important role as one of the basic ingredients in cooking and in preparation of sweets. And this is something we can emphasize once again, because sugar was not available in the ancient world, and not known certainly until Alexander the Great's time. And yes, certainly there was an element of the sugar seen as a spice, and the sugar seen as something that has a medicinal value too, especially in the medieval world. But that was the white, refined sugar used sparingly, of course. For the vast majority of time, of human time, the honey was the basic and almost the only thing that will give that sweet hit in foods, and not only foods, just eating it raw as well. Now in Greece, and as everywhere else, there is lots of room for delicious honey because there is a rich flora and a temperate climate. Many places are like this, of course. And the Greek honey nowadays is quite famous. And of course, Greece being a small country, I don't think it produces enough to have huge exports. What's happening here, the taste of Greek honey can be distilled down to the fact that the Greek flora is rich with over 7,500 different plant species growing around the mainland of Greece right now. And certainly, exceptional quality honey is produced from flowers such as orange and Mediterranean heather, as well as forest honey from coniferous trees such as fir and pine. And also there is this dark, rich forest honey from chestnuts. Along with olive oil and grapes and wine, honey is one of the staples of the Greek diet. Today, there are about 2,000 metric tons of honey produced every year, and quite a lot of it is consumed locally. But this is today. Let's go back to the origins of our myths and legends. Greek legends and myths place the childhood of Zeus on Mount Lycaeus in Arcadia, Peloponnese, or on Mount Ida in Crete, where his mother Rhea hid him, and the beasts supplemented the future god's diet of goat's milk with their honey. The Cretans claimed that his nurses Amalthea and Melissa were really princesses, daughters of King Melissus, who shared the care of the divine baby. Amalthea with the milk of her goat, and Melissa with the honey of her bees. The name Melissa means she who makes honey. As we've seen on last week's episode, with the history of Crete and Cretan food, there's also a myth of a sacred cavern, a place of immortality, where time did not exist, guarded by fiery bees. In that legend, Rhea gave birth to Zeus here, handing him over at once to the care of the insects. But four rash intruders, wearing bronze armor for protection, made their way to steal her honey, which was still forbidden to humans. They were about to bear off with the sacrilegious loot when the newborn child began to cry. Seeing him in his blood-stained swaddling clothes, the intruders were so frightened that the armor dropped off and the bees attacked them. But no one could die on this sacred cave, particularly after touching the honey. To maintain the order of things, Zeus saved the robbers from the bees' venom by instantly changing them into birds, which flew away. In gratitude to the bees for the devotion to duty, the god gave them the bronze armor to hide their fiery nature. Transporting ourselves to the other side of the European continent, in the western side of Mediterranean, Spanish honey is very successful and takes up quite a lot of space in our supermarkets, generally in the European Union and European community. And there is a rock painting which can be claimed that it's one of the oldest depictions of honey gathering in the world, in a cave of the spider near Valencia. The artist there, working about 12,000 years ago, give or take, has made an ingenious use of the cavity in the rock wall itself. A man clinging to creepers or ropes is putting one hand into the hole, holding a basket to take the honey with the other. The bees are flying around him, determined not to lose the treasure. Similar rock paintings are found in South Africa and Zimbabwe. In one of them, the honey hunter, decked with feathers in Zulu manner, is perched on what looks like a ladder and holds a lighted torch up to the whirling clouds of insects as they fly away, in front of clearly depicted honeycombs. Deep in the Republic of Georgia, an archaeological tomb site was uncovered that belonged to the Martkopi and Bedeni people from a farming culture called Araxis Kura. It seems like the tomb belonged to an important chief or a leader and had several other people buried with him. Inside this Bronze Age burial site were wild berry offerings to the dead. Despite being about 6,000 years old, they were still incredibly well preserved because they were cured with honey, ancient honey. This Georgian ancient honey was uncovered around 2003. Three types of honey were found: meadow flower, berry and linden. And much like in ancient Egypt, the honeys were in ceramic vessels in a tomb, and they pretty much had still sweet and intense and musky undertones in aromas and flavors. This honey was still, in one way or another, edible, if, of course, we could eat it. The first actual evidence of beekeeping, whereby man captured or lured honeybees to nest inside artificially made cavities or hives, comes from Bronze Age ancient Egypt, during the First Dynasty, around 3100 BCE. Early evidence consistent of inscriptions describing bees and how they were kept. By the Third Dynasty, 2650 BCE, paintings and hieroglyphs depicting bees were more common and more detailed. Some of the best examples from this period can be found at the Solar Temple of Nuisire, which was built to pay tribute to the sun god Ra. Ancient Egyptian beekeepers kept their bees in clay or mud pipes, approximately 1.2 meters in length and 1/3 of a meter in diameter. These were typically constructed from a bundle of thin sticks, grass and reeds held together by mud, which was baked in the hot sun. Once dried and hardened, the center of the bundle would be excavated, leaving behind a strong hollow artificial log. The ends of the clay logs would be sealed with a ring of timber and held in place with a mud cement. One of the ends would include a small opening for the bees to come and go. The beekeepers would keep a great many of these horizontal hives together in a single apiary. They would be stacked together and earthed up with soil to form a large wall. When it was time to harvest the honey, the keeper would simply remove the wooden ring at one end of the hive and pull out the honeycomb. When a hive became too full of bees, the keepers would remove some of the combs and bees and transfer them to a new hive, an ancient form of artificial swarming. These ancient keepers understood their bees well and were skilled at mimicking piping queens, which they would lure from the hives and then catch and transplant to a new home. Later on, in the 26th dynasty, around 672 BC to 525 BC, we find the best examples of beekeeping in ancient Egypt in the form of elaborate hieroglyphs, which describe in detail how honey was harvested from the hives. Firstly, the bees were presented with vessels containing scented offerings, which were gently burnt to produce an incense. This was an early form of smoking the bees and would no doubt have calmed the bees prior to the opening the hives, just as modern-day beekeepers do. It is not clear whether or not the ancient beekeepers understood why smoke calmed the bees, or if the offering of burning incense was merely symbolic, as part of their belief that bees arose from the tears of the sun god Ra. Clearly, it must have calmed the bees, and would have been crucial that it did so, since Egyptian beekeepers are depicted never wearing protective clothing. Some paintings and hieroglyphs show the keeper holding what may be a cloth over the face while inspecting the bees, but mostly they appear to have no specialist protective clothing. Perhaps they have mastered the art of breeding queens and were able to breed very docile and gentle bees, which meant they didn't need cumbersome protective clothing in the hot African sun. There was a strict hierarchy to beekeeping in ancient Egypt. Bees were nearly always kept in or near the religious temples where they were tended by temple beekeepers. These beekeepers were responsible for dividing the colonies to make up new stocks of bees, harvesting honey and processing the combs so that they would be stored for later use. Temple beekeepers were supervised by a chief beekeeper who would be answerable to an overseer of the bees and the temple lands. The overseer is not likely to have been a beekeeper himself, but would have been familiar with the goings-on of the temple beekeepers. The overseer would have reported directly to the pharaoh. The ancient Egyptians used honey and wax in a wide range of disciplines, from medicinal use to the manufacturing of cosmetics, wigs, and the creation of wax figurines of gods and kings. They probably used propolis for medicinal purposes too. Honey was always an expensive commodity, and its price, or its value itself, would have been similar to that of today. The Egyptians didn't just produce honey. They also imported honey from all over the ancient world, from parts of Africa, the Middle East and Europe. There was a thriving international trade in honey, which is evident from inscriptions on the clay pots the honeycombs were stored in, and from written receipts found alongside containers of combs. The Egyptians used this method beekeeping for at least after the Second World War, when Europeans tried to convince them to change the method because the traditional Egyptian hives produced very low yields. However, the modern hives weren't as successful as they would have hoped. So it seems like in Egypt today, things are changing again, and the beekeepers are now reverting back to the horizontal clay pot hives of the ancient Egyptians, which they say keep the bees more naturally and suffer fewer problems from pathogens, basically. Clearly, the ancient Egyptians knew and understood their bees very well, and they were able to build perfect hives for them. Meanwhile, in Mesopotamia, an inscription records the introduction of honeybees into the land of Suhum, where they were previously unknown. I am Shamash Resh Ushur, the governor of Suhu and the land of Mari. Bees that collect honey, which none of my ancestors had ever seen or brought into the land of Suhu, I brought down from the mountain of the men of Habdha and made them settle in the orchards of the town of Gabari, built it. They collect honey and wax, and I know how to melt the honey and wax, and the gardeners know too. Whoever comes in the future, may he ask the old men of the town, who will say thus: they are the buildings of Shamash Resh Ushur, the governor of Suhu, who introduced honeybees into the land of Suhu. The oldest archaeological finds directly relating to beekeeping in the wider Mesopotamian Near Middle East area is also found in Rehov, a Bronze Age archaeological site in the Jordan Valley. 30 intact hives made of straw and unbaked clay were discovered in the ruins of the city, dating from about 900 BCE by archaeologists. The hives were found in orderly rows, three high, in a manner that, according to the archaeologists again, could have accommodated around 100 hives, held more than 1 million bees, and had potential of an annual yield of around 500 kilograms of honey and about 70 kilograms of beeswax. All this points out to an advanced honey industry in the area 3,000 years ago. In the medicine of Babylonians and Assyrians, a lot of drugs, which were remedies to be eaten or put on bandages or put on the body directly or rubbed into the parts of the body that they were hurting or swollen or whatever, a lot of these drugs and treatments were made with honey. Remedies and other ways of using foods, as we know, also used honey. And we find an interesting one, an enema, given both in a warm and in a cold form to patients with honey. And the frequency of such ingredients clearly shows the aim of soothing the inflamed and irritated muscles as well as the swollen fleshy portions. Then the same mixture is ordered to be taken through the mouth and to be introduced into the anus, which perhaps might strike us as naive nowadays. But the logic of the treatment, according to the Babylonians and Assyrians, of course, of 4,000 years ago, it's irreproachable. The aim of the enema was to reach portions of the body that could not be attacked through the mouth. And if the remedy was a good one, it ought to work equally well, no matter in what way it was brought into the body. And we know honey has antibacterial properties, so which is something that they didn't know, of course, but might have helped in many different areas in of medicine. Certain people famous for their wisdom are said to have been fed on honey in childhood, like the god Zeus, or at important turning points in their lives. They include Pythagoras and the first Celtic Christian mystic, Ethne. Herodotus, writing on Egypt, tells us that the beasts offered in sacrifice were stuffed before roasting with a mixture of flour, figs, raisins, and aromatics mingled with honey, to enhance the pleasure of those taking part in the ceremony and feasting in the name of the gods. The favorite honey stuffing of Greek banquets was called himam. It also contained chopped cheese, offal, vinegar, onions, and small quantities of other ingredients, according to a recipe given by Epanetis. Honey provided Democritus with a simpler satisfaction. In fact, the final satisfaction in the life of the philosopher, who advocated the pursuit of happiness through moderation in pleasure, and he also invented the theory of the atom. The story goes that when the old man, who had always lived frugally, felt his end approaching after 109 well-spent years, he decided to omit some items from his diet each day. When there was nothing left to omit, the celebration of the festival of Demeter was in progress, and he did not want to commit the solecism of dying. He had a pot of honey brought to him and absorbed only its fragrance by raising it to his nostrils. Once the festival was over, the pot of honey was taken away, and then he died. I love these crazy stories. There is one delicious and very simple dish we can still make: curds with honey, or in ancient Greek, hypotrides. Boil milk and immediately add some slightly fermented honey. Stir to make the milk curdle. Pour it into a bowl to set, drain it, and serve it with fruit. I'll be back after this short break.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Apicius Hani's Sauce for Fish was a great Roman classic. And generally in the book there are lots of recipes that include the sweet and sour sauce made with wine and honey and vinegar and fish sauce. And the author also gives us the recipe for ham in a honey crust, which is quite different from the famous honey roast Virginia ham of the American pioneers. The North American native people claim to have invented another early American dish, beans with honey, but others believe it came from the Chinese who led the railroad tracks of the American West. Both the Greeks and the Romans, though, also used honey as a cooking liquid. Julius Pollux, the Greco-Egyptian rhetorician, evidently enjoyed stuffed leaves cooked in honey. Not vine leaves, but tender fig leaves. He gives the recipe in his 2nd century lexicographical work, the Onomasticon. Make a stuffing of wheat flour, lard, eggs and brains. Divide it into small pieces and wrap it in leaves. The stuffed leaves are first cooked in chicken or kid broth, then drained and cooked a second time in boiling honey. Then there's the other famous Roman dish, edible dormice, preserved in honey sauce or baked in honey. Guinea fowl with honey vinegar is still a speciality in Périgord in France. Honey was long used for preserving fruits, whole or as a jam. Inanthi was a preserve of wild vine flowers in honey. Even more delicious was rose petal paste. In India, meat was kept from 1 year to the next coated in honey. Central to our story of honey, of course, are the bees. Bees were supposed to have settled on the lips of Plato, the famous ancient Greek poet Pindar, and the well-named St. Ambrose of Milan as children. During the famous mythical Golden Age, the Orphic texts say that honey ran from the oak trees and the Titan Cronos was sleeping, intoxicated with honey. The first sleep in the world. When his son Zeus chained him and took him away to the islands of the blessed at the end of the world, where it was said that the ancient god and the age of gold could still be found. The implication being that honey, the first food, dates from the creation of the world and existed even before the bees brought it into mankind. This first food, as we said earlier, obviously has been the food of the chief god. Bees also tended to be associated with the underworld and with the souls of the dead. This was likely because wild hives are often located in cracks in rock walls or caves, which were imagined to be entrances to the underworld. Various Greek philosophers believed that humans could be reincarnated as bees, or that the bees were the souls of those who had not yet been born. Sometimes nymphs were referred to as bees because they were believed to be reincarnated souls. Ambrosia and nectar, the foods which grant immortality to the gods when they eat them, were generally considered to be something similar to honey or mead. Honey was a popular offering to the gods and the nymphs as well for the dead. For instance, in Sophocles' play, Oedipus Rex, our protagonist, upon realizing his sins, asks what he should do. The chorus replies, "Water with honey mixed,
these poor upon the earth. Chthonic or underworld deities, in particular, were said to have liked offerings of honey, perhaps because of the connection between bees and the souls of the dead. Cerberus, or Kerberus, as we say in Greek, the three-headed dog which guarded the doorway of Hades, the underworld, was distracted when one threw honey cakes to him, thus allowing entrance. Persephone, wife of Hades and queen of the underworld, was called Melitodes, or Honeyed One. Greek mythology has several gods who are associated with bees. Aristeus is the god of beekeeping. After inadvertently causing the death of Eurydice, who stepped upon a snake while fleeing him, her nymph sisters punished him by killing every one of his bees. Witnessing the empty hives where his bees had dwelt, Aristeus wept and consulted Proteus, who advised him to give honor in memory of Eurydice by sacrificing 4 bulls and 4 cows. Upon doing so, he let them rot, and from the corpses rose bees to fill his empty hives. Prophecy in ancient Greece seems to have been associated with bees too. The Homeric hymn to Hermes acknowledges that Apollo's gift of prophecy first came to him from 3 bee maidens, usually but doubtfully identified with the Thriae, a trinity of pre-Hellenic Aegean bee goddesses. In addition, the Oracle of Delphi is referred to as the Delphian bee by Pindar. In other myths from the Mycenaean and Minoan age, the bee was the emblem of Potnia, also referred to as the pure mother bee. Her priestesses received the name of Melissa, bee in Greek. According to Neoplatonic philosopher Porphyry, the priestesses of Demeter were also called Melissae, and Melissa was the name of Artemis. Melissus was the god of honey and bees, whose daughter Ida and Adrastia fed the infant Zeus with milk and honey, as we've seen earlier, when his mother hid him from Cronus. In other ancient European folklore and custom, telling the bees of important events in the family, particularly births and deaths, was vital to keep the bees content and happy in their hive. Greeks and Romans mingled wine and honey together in drinking bowls. A cousin of Dionysus, called Melicertes, he who mingles the honey, was drowned when his mother, the wine god's aunt and nurse, went mad and jumped into the sea with him. The ocean swallowed up his corpse, but he resuscitated, riding a dolphin, as the sea god Palaemon, and thereafter, although properly a marine deity, formed a part of the train of Dionysus with the satyrs and Silene. The most famous myth about the origin of bees, as we said, is the legend of Aristeus, and that was the spontaneous generation of bees, this definitely mythical notion that proved very tenacious and stayed with humans about the explanation of the natural world until probably 17th century, really. The spontaneous generation of bees was an article of faith in apicultural treatises, until the microscope revealed that the king bee was actually a queen. In fact, a queen mother whose sole function was to lay millions of eggs from which her young would hatch. To quote Virgil, "It is time to detail the famous invention of an Arcadian bee master, the process by which he often made a culture of bees from the putrid blood of slaughtered bullocks. The Arcadian shepherd Aristeus, son of Apollo and the nymph Cyrene, had pursued Eurydice with his attention and was guilty of her death. Because he was also regarded as responsible for the death of her husband Orpheus, he was deprived of his beloved bees. On his mother's advice, he sacrificed to the sage of Orpheus and Eurydice a poppy to Orpheus to appease his anger, and to Eurydice 4 bulls of excellent body and as many cows. When the 9th day has dawned, a miracle sudden and strange to tell of, they behold, from the oxen's bellies, all over the rotting flesh, creatures are humming, swarming through the wreckage of the ribs, huge and trailing clouds of bees, that now in the treetops unite and hang like a bunch of grapes from the pliant branches." Here the bees are obviously seen as related to blowflies, whose maggots in fact have no connection to them at all, as we know. The myth of Aristeus also shows the tenacity of the sexual taboo which features in the beekeeping manuals of antiquity. The shepherd's first bees were taken from him because he had desired a woman, and someone else's woman at that. You had to abstain from carnal intercourse before trying to recover a swarm of bees, reputed to be virgins, or to collect honey, a pure substance. so honey, like wax, was much used in ancient ritual. In funeral rites, the dead were given a supply of honey to enjoy in the afterlife, since honey denoted immortality. Babylonians, Sumerians, Aryans, Cretans all buried their great men in honey. There are echoes of this custom in Herodotus and Strabo. Alexander the Great revived it when he was embalmed in honey on his own death, but there's no evidence to show that it was a common custom in the Balkans. Embalming was generally with wax, as in ancient Egypt, where the word mummy came from Persian, which means wax. Finally, at the festival of winter solstice, the Hopi Indians of Arizona symbolically buried the dead year, but with a communal meal consisting of honey and flour. The same foods are associated in the Russian Jewish celebrations of Rosh Hashanah, when the head of the household gives his children bread and honey as a good omen. As I said earlier in the introduction, sugar was not very known in the Mediterranean, and it was very costly. So honey was the best available sweetener and the most concentrated source of dietary sugar throughout prehistoric and classical times. As such, it was used in cuisine, it was mixed with wine and other fluid to make sweet drinks. And in this and other forms, it was very commonly used in medicine. Honey was still gathered from the wild in classical Greece and Rome, as it had evidently been for millennia. We can learn this, if little else, from the sad and silly story told by Conon and Antiphilus of the honey collector who used to let himself down a cliff face by a rope. The rope became smeared with honey, his dog chewed it through, and the honey collector fell into his death. Beekeeping, however, had already begun in Egypt in the 3rd millennium BC, and was familiar in Minoan Crete. An ancient beehive was found in an excavation of the Akrotiri in Santorini. Information on classical beekeeping comes not only from archaeology, but from detailed instructions given by Varro and Columella in prose and by Virgil in verse. Honey often had a smoky taste, for the simple reason that smoke was used to drive the bees away while it was taken from the hive. It was well known that honey varied in flavor and aroma, depending on which flowers had been available to the bees. The best honey was agreed to be that of Mount Mitos in Attica, which had the special taste of thyme. Thyme as the herb thyme, not thyme, the measuring of passing day. Certain honeys deriving from poisonous plants were poisonous themselves. This was a problem, according to Roman sources, with the honey of Corsica and Sardinia particularly. In ancient Near East, honey was frequently offered to the gods, as we said. For example, in Gilgamesh's offering to the god of Shamash, honey was included. The sacrifices of Mithridates of Pontus, honey was included too. Melisponda, offerings of honey were also made in Greece, for example, to the Evmenides, as described by Plutarch. There is another dish, Greek dish called horia, which is difficult to define, but possibly liver or other offal cooked in the coal and possibly cooked with milk and honey. Mead, a wine made by fermenting diluted honey, is not widely known in the ancient Mediterranean world, since must was available from grapes and in much larger quantity than honey, and it was a better raw material for wine. However, Aristotle reports that mead was made by the Taulanti people of Illyria. He describes the process in detail and adds convincingly that the result tasted like old wine. Pliny says that mead was also made in Phrygia. In pre-Roman Britain, it was believed by some that bees could carry messages from our world plane to the world of the dead, and could bring back messages from the gods in the other world, so bees were treated with much respect. Honey was one of the grave gifts that was buried with Egyptian royalty, as they considered honey an eternal food, to be left forever in the sealed tombs, so that the dead might be nourished in the afterlife with honey in its natural state, as well as in the form of honey cakes. And because honey doesn't spoil, it was associated with immortality and resurrection. A jar of honey was found, still in a fairly liquid state apparently, in the excavated tomb of King Tutankhamun. As far as it could be determined, the jar has been hermetically sealed and placed in the tomb some 3,300 years ago. Apparently, again, I'm not sure about that, archaeologists tasted that honey and found it to be sweet. Now, if that's true, I don't know. I guess I'll have to find out more about this. Honey, it wasn't just a grave good either. Bandages were soaked in liquid containing honey before wrapping the dead as its antibacterial properties stopped decay or slowed down decay. It wasn't just the ancient Egyptians that venerated honey. The ancient Romans often used it to pay taxes, and they loved it so much, well, specifically Virgil, but were mystified by where it came from, that they considered that it might be the sweat from the sky or spit from the stars. The miraculous status of honey may be why so many rulers and leaders, fictional and non-fictional, from the ancient world requested to be buried in honey. Either that, or they thought that as honey was incorruptible, their bodies would not change or decay. Achilles, after being shot by an arrow in his only vulnerable spot, as well as the kings of Sparta and Alexander the Great, were all buried in honey. It wasn't just people opting for this themselves. Herod I, king of Judea, had his incredibly beautiful wife Mariamne executed as a result of a complex series of plots against her, which mostly originated from Herod's wish for her to be executed in the event of his death, as he didn't want her to have another husband after him. Mariamne was not impressed by this, and thus a series of actions occurred which led to her death. Herod had her preserved in honey and kept her by his side for 7 years because he grieved her passing so much. Of course, some of the world's rarest and more interesting honeys nowadays are things like the Sardinian bitter honey, which was famous or infamous, let's say, in the ancient Roman world. The Sardinian bitter honey is obtained by the strawberry tree, Arbutus, and it's called Arbutus honey. And basically, among Romans, Cicero mentioned this honey, saying that Sardinia was a bad island. Everything in the island was ugly, and even its abundant honey was bitter. Horace, into a passage of his work Ars Poetica, associated this honey with various unpleasant things, like out-of-tune concert and fat ointment. And Virgil countered the sweet thyme honey of the mountains of Sicily to the Sardinian bitter honey to express the opposite feelings between two different people. With regard to the properties of this honey, Dioscorides, physician, pharmacologist, botanist that we've seen before in our podcast, in his treatise De Materia Medica, enhanced the medicinal qualities of the Sardinian bitter honey, especially regarding the skin. Even today, the honey from Sardinia, from Arbutus, it has a strong bitter flavor, and it's not a honey that has a universally accepted palate. It's known as miele amaro today, and it's a delicacy produced in Sardinia, mainly. Another honey that is infamous in ancient Rome is from the Turkish Black Sea region near Trabzon, where in 67 BC, Roman soldiers invaded the area under the general Pompey, and the people loyal to the king Mithridates secretly lined the Romans' path with enticing chunks of this mud honey, with mud honeycombs. The army ate this because they were hungry, they were gluttonous, and as the story goes, they were driven into intoxicated stupor by this hallucinogenic honey, and many of them were slain by the local soldiers. This honey is still produced in Turkey today, and of course, it has some effects like that if you eat a lot of it, and to certain people, some people don't feel like this. But yeah, it has this reputation. It's dark and reddish, and it comes from the rhododendron nectar collected by the bees. Again, this is another honey that people believe that is a kind of medicine, and they use it for hypertension, diabetes, and some stomach diseases. In Burma, the bodies of important men were placed in honey for a year because the preparations for the funeral took that time. A Burmese student in Manchester in 1925 reported that this custom was still in place, but only for monks. Apparently, the leftover honey was then sold at markets because it was considered incorruptible, so that even the presence of the dead could not change its nature. Honey wasn't only used for burial and embalming, or even snacks in the afterlife, but was also used to honor, appease, and make contact with the dead. The offering of honey to the dead is a very ancient custom. It seems that early civilizations thought that either they needed to regain the favor of the spirits of the dead, or that they needed to be placated. Honey, being the sweetest food known at the time, was perfect to sweeten the relationship with those that had died. The sacrifices to the dead were generally threefold, and usually consisted of honey, oil and wine, or honey and milk or water, oil and wine. But whatever the constituents were, honey was always one of them. There is even an inscription on a golden plaque found in southern Italy, which reads, "The dead are thrice offered a drink, a honey mixture, milk and water." In Lucian's Haron, or A Survey of the Follies of Mankind, Lucian of Samosata was a Syrian satirist, rhetorician, and basically an ancient philosopher. So in his writings, in this book called Haron, Hermes is even asked why men dig a trench and burn expensive feasts and pour wine and honey into the trench. Hermes answered that he cannot think what good it can do to them, but anyhow, people believe that the dead are summoned up from below to the feast, and that they flutter around the smoke and drink the honey draught from the trench. In both the classical texts of Iliad and Odyssey, there are examples of the use of honey to attract the dead to receive their wisdom. The most famous one is Odysseus, who wants to call up the spirit of the seer Tiresias, and the enchantress Circe tells him first to dig a trench and make a sacrifice to all the dead. And there, in the trench, which was a cubit in length and breadth, he puts a drink offering, first mead, thereafter sweet wine, and the third time water and sprinkled white meal thereon, and entreat with many prayers the strengthless heads of the dead. In Roman times, Silius Italicus, in his 17-book poem Punica, tells how Scipio, wanting to call up his father's ghosts, went to Apollo's priestesses and received the advice of sacrificing two black lambs and pour the choicest honey and the purest wine. And even the great playwright Euripides makes Helen send Hermione to the grave of Clytemnestra with the offerings of honey, milk and wine. There is also a strong connection between honey and the ancient Greek underworld. And there's another example of Medea in the eponymous piece where she tells Jason to win the favor of Hecate by pouring from a goblet the hive-stored labor of the bees. And he learns from this, and on another occasion he pours into the river sacrifices of honey and pure oil to earth, and to the gods of the country, and to the souls of the heroes, beseeching them to aid him. And Cerberus, the three-headed dog, who guarded the entrance to Hades, as we said, was known to particularly be fond of honey. And he was outwitted on more than one occasion by being thrown honey cakes. In Aeneid, a cake of honey and wheat is given to Aeneas by the Sibyl in order to placate Cerberus. This gift of honey cakes is believed to be a possible origin of the phrase, a sop to Cerberus. Going to the Far East, Chinese apiculture evolved from harvesting wild honey, as every other one did, though it's unknown when the first people first started to domesticate bees. The first professional beekeeper on record was Xiang Qi in the early 1st century. Living deep in the mountains, Xiang not only operated beehives and a pig farm with the help of his 300 servants, but he also spread knowledge about beekeeping. During the Three Kingdoms period, around 220 AD, honey was used to make refreshing beverages in summer and to preserve candied fruits. Guo Pu, a scholar on the Jin dynasty, described honey as scattered like sweet dew, congealed like lard and fresh and smooth like jade. He noted how well it complemented other medicines and wrote about the social structure of bees and their hives. Honey and beekeeping were recorded quite extensively in the poetry of the Tang dynasty, 618 to 907 AD, when they became common businesses in China. The first book of apiculture, Record of a Bee Palace, written by Hao Yixing, included 12 chapters on beekeeping and 3 more on bees and wasps. The book was not entirely scientific, studied as it was with references to superstitions like bees are afraid of old people. Honey was also known as Dongniang, which translates as winter brew, because harvesting and making honey was a tough task. Suzhe brother of writer, poet, painter, calligrapher and pharmacologist Xu Shi, once wrote that adding some honey into Tusu wine brewed in the traditional method was more delicious than the wine enjoyed by the immortals. And that's all. That's a short history of honey in the ancient world. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's myths, legends and facts about ancient honey across the world. And if you like this episode, please rate and review wherever you get your podcast from. And if you like to support the Delicious Legacy and me making new episodes as often as possible, then please go to Patreon and support me from $3 a month. Your subscriptions mean a lot to me and basically help in this difficult time with podcasts and the podcast industry. So any kind of donation means a lot. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week with an interview for a new book release. Take care. Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.